The Jazz Spotlight, Episode 27. Hey, 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 Jazz Spotlight fans! How's it going? Yanni Lunga here, and welcome to this 27th episode of the Jazz Spotlight podcast. Thank you for being with me today. I'm really excited about bringing you another episode and another guest. But before I go more in depth about today's talk, I have an announcement to make. It's very, very excited about this. And, you know, I'm sure that if you're interested in, you know, music business and inspiring stories, you're going to be interested in this as well. This weekend in Jackson, Mississippi, there's going to be the Soul Art Pop-Up Festival organized by Ezra Brown on Friday, September 5th and on Saturday, September 6th. And on September 6th, so on Saturday, I'm going to be having a Google Hangout talk as part of the music business panel of discussion, the Soul Talks. How about that? I'm really excited about this. And, you know, it's just going to be plenty of great speakers. We're going to talk about different aspects of the music industry. And, you know, we're going to also give out advice. And if you are in Jackson, Mississippi, September 5th, there's going to be a lot of music. So be there. And September 6th, there's going to be the talks and then music again in the evening. And the program for Saturday is the talks are going to be from 10 a.m. until 2 p.m. Eastern time. And the talk I'm going to be part of, it's going to start around 1 p.m. Eastern time. So Saturday, September 6th, 1 p.m. And you know, in case you cannot make it to Jackson, Mississippi, it's all right, because that part, it's probably going to be broadcasted, because I'm going to be up with Google Hangouts. I'm not actually going to go to Mississippi, but I'm going to be talking from here. So you're going to have the opportunity to follow what we're going to be talking about live. And, you know, to learn more about the Soul Art Pop-Up Festival and to watch the talk, the Soul Talks on Saturday, September 6th, around 1 p.m., you can find more information and you can follow the broadcast at thejetspotlight.com/soul, S-O-U-L, jetspotlight.com/soul. And, you know, sync your watches and, you know, mark the date, because it's going to be really exciting. And I'd like you to be there with us and, you know, get as much value as possible from all the great guests that are going to be there. And also to get more updates on the event, you can follow me on Twitter at Jazz Spotlight. I'm gonna tweet during the talk as well, before the talk and during the talk, so that, you know, even if you get there, even if you start follow the broadcast a little bit later, you're still gonna have plenty of great things to enjoy. So if on September 6th you want to spend an afternoon or evening or morning with me, depending from where you are, head over to thejazzspotlight.com/soul. Let's talk about today, episode 27 already. It's unbelievable. Time really flies when you're having fun. And you know, the Jazz Spotlight podcast is all about inspiring stories. It's fun, but it's really serious. And today we're going to be pretty serious. It's a really laid back episode, but the topic, it's really important, because it's something that everyone asks himself or herself if it's, you know, in the music business. And it's, how can I make money? That's what we're going to talk about today. Ways musicians can make money. So you're going to hear about different kind of ways you can monetize your, you know, your music, from the more traditional ones to some that, you know, you maybe haven't even thought about until now. So are you ready to have some fun and get some valuable tips? Here is Different Ways Musicians Can Make Money with Dave Cool. Enjoy. Hey everybody, what's up? Yanni Lunga here, and welcome to this new episode of the Jazz Spotlight podcast. I hope everything is cool where you are, and you will understand why I said cool. Sorry about this joke, but I had to make it. I have another great guest here today that I'm really excited about. And you know, the topic of the episode, it's pretty interesting, because if you're a musician, sure, you do it because you love music, you love to perform, you love to express your feelings, but it's also because you need to pay rent and bills, so you need to earn money. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about different ways musicians can make money. The guest I have here today is from Canada. We go back to Canada, to Montreal this time. You maybe remember from episode 18, I had Pierre Chrétien of the Soul Jazz Orchestra from Ottawa, so it's great to go back to Canada. He's the director of artist relations at Banzoogl, and he's going to tell us more about the great things he does. It's with great pleasure that I welcome on the show Dave Cool. Hey, Dave, how's it going?
I'm good, Danny. How are you?
I'm great, man. First things first, thanks so much for being on the podcast, man. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I always like to talk music industry.
Yeah, tell me about it. And, you know, for those who are listening, it's funny because we were talking with Dave about, you know, how kind of I got to know about it. And he had been on my radar for quite some time because I've been reading articles. He writes some very interesting articles. So if you're, you know, interested in the music industry, obviously you are, if you're listening to this podcast, you can find many of his articles at websites, for example, like the Music Think Tank, but also on the blog on Banzoogl. But now let's start from the first thing first. Tell us more about Banzoogl. I know that it's a great way to build websites in a very easy way in just a couple of minutes. What can you tell us about Banzoogl?
Yeah, so Banzoogl's a company that was founded 10 years ago. We're celebrating our 10th year this year. Founded here in Montreal by a local musician, and it's a website platform built for musicians so they can easily and affordably build their own website. So they don't have to hire a designer. They don't need to know any coding. It comes fully hosted, domain name, all the design tools, hundreds of different themes, and, you know, every feature a musician or a band needs. So, you know, music players, blog, calendar. They can sell their music directly. We have our own e-commerce platform where we don't take any percentage of sales. So artists make 100% of the money when they sell music directly through the websites. Yeah. And mailing list is included. Just all the tools that a musician needs in one place. And we have 7 day a week online support. And, you know, most of us at the company are current or former musicians ourselves. So it's a very musician friendly company. And I've known about them for years. I've only worked for them for the last three and a half years, but I've known them almost since they started because I was coming up to the music scene at the same time as the founder and knew his band and heard about Banzoogl shortly after it started. So I've been a big fan of the company since they started. They're very musician friendly, great reputation, and they offer a really great service to musicians. And, you know, obviously musicians agree that they've been around for 10 years, which in internet years is a long time. Yeah, exactly. You know, there's not many music technology companies that have been around that long. You know, there's a handful. So it's been great to actually work with them the last 3-4 years and, get to do, like you mentioned before, get to do a lot of blogging. And deal with the Banzoogl members and go to conferences and have meetup events. It's the best job I could probably hope for, in the music industry for my interests and what I enjoy doing. So anyone can reach out to us on Twitter at Banzoogl, or, you can reach out to me directly at dcool@banzoogl.com if people have questions, specifically about Banzoogl.
Man, that's so great. First of all, you know, congratulations and a big shout out to all the Banzoogl staff for, you know, the 10 years. It's great. And, you know, thank you for the great things you do. I actually read their blog quite often and they have very interesting things. And also, if you are an artist and you're thinking about building your website, or, you know, you just want to do something that it's relatively easy to do, but still that looks very professional, you should definitely check Banzoogl out. And as for Dave, What can we say? You know, you will hear more about him, but, you know, it's just a very, very cool guy in every way. And also what I like about you guys at Banzoogl is the fact that, as you mentioned, you know, it's a company that was founded by musicians. So you guys know what are the issues that musicians might have when it comes to, you know, websites, and what are the tools they need to promote themselves. And these are some of the things you also talk about on your personal website, davecool.ca.
Yeah, which is hosted by Banzoogl, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. And actually, I would like to ask you if you could give a couple of tips about websites for bands and musicians. What are the features you think bands and artists should have on their websites?
Yeah, it's a great question. And just to tie into something you mentioned before about how BandZoogle sort of knows, you know, what features the artists might need for their websites, it's because of the musicians themselves. I mean, our research and development is really the membership. We have over 20,000 active musicians and bands that use BandZoogle, and they let us know what they want and have for the last 10 years. Tens of thousands of bands over the last 10 years have you know, told BandZoogle what they want to have on their website. And so we build things according to, you know, demand. If there's a lot, like recently, we noticed a lot of people were searching for Instagram in our help section. So we saw a lot of people were putting widgets on their website. So we just built an integration. So that they can do it seamlessly. Same thing with Bandcamp, and other features as well. So it's nice to work with a company that, that listens to their membership and just pumps out a regular stream of new features and additions and upgrades, according to what the membership wants. So it's, so in that sense, it's really fun. And in terms of what musicians should have on their website, it's obviously a subject I've blogged about many, many times. But to boil it down to the simplest terms, I mean, we often say that musicians should spend more money on professional photos than on their website. Because a professional photo will probably do the most, or not having a professional photo will do more damage to your website than anything else. Because when I'm reviewing websites for members, I can tell immediately if they've had a professional photography take their photos, and it makes a huge difference in perception and professionalism. So the biggest advice I give to musicians is to invest the money, get professional photos done, and because you can use those for your website, you can use those for your social media profiles, be very useful. You can use BandZoogle's pre-made themes to plug those photos in and make a really awesome looking professional website, but if you don't have those professional photos to begin with, it's going to be a problem. It's not going to look very good. So professional photos is one. Secondly is to try not to do too much. Simple is often better. I come across a lot of websites where there's just tons of pages and tons of content on each page. People have very short attention spans, especially in the age of social media. So just to keep the design simple, clean, have certain key elements on each page, and then make sure that the website is actually updated. You know, websites should not be a static flyer online. They should be living, you know, things that, that are always changing and being updated. And so, you know, having a blog on your website is important, and it's a good way to bring fans to your website and bring them into your world and away from the sort of noisy social media atmosphere. And, when people do land on your website, one thing we always advise it to have some kind of call to action, which all that means is something, some kind of message or image on your website when people land on it that encourages them to take action on something. Now, that could be to check out your latest video. It could be to sign up to your mailing list. It could be to donate to your crowdfunding campaign. Just to encourage people. If you don't ask, if you don't encourage people, they may miss an important thing that you're trying to work on in your career. And it depends on your career goals. So it could be, you know, check out our upcoming tour, buy our latest album. We mostly encourage artists to build up their mailing list and get people signed up to their mailing list, because that's one of the most important marketing tools. Sounds a bit old school, but it is still one of the most valuable ways, valuable marketing tools that musicians can have at their disposal. And because people rarely change their email addresses, so you can keep in touch with that database of fans conceivably for your whole career, whereas social media kind of comes and goes. You know, you can't reach everyone. You know, if people built up a huge following on MySpace back in the day, you can't just copy paste those fans to Facebook or Twitter. You have to start over again. So if you have people on a mailing list, it's a much more reliable way to keep in touch with people long term. So on your website, we encourage right when people land on it to have some kind of mailing list sign up to get people signed up to your list.
No, great tips. And actually, before I go more into commenting your answer, I think I forgot to say that it's also very cool about BandZoogle, the e-commerce aspect of it, that you said that artists keep or retain 100% of, you know, of the money, which I think it's great, and, you know, it doesn't happen that often. So chapeau to you guys. keep up the great work. And it's so nice to hear your tips, because you mentioned some of the things that have popped up before in the past on the podcast. For example, on episode 8 with Christophe de Gelt, we talked about music management and booking, and he also talked about the importance of the quality. He was talking both about pictures, like you said, and he also videos, because he was making the kind of, he was saying that you never know who's gonna kind of access that content. So it's better to, like you said, to invest in something that it's good than just, you know, be in a hurry. Just you want to have a website up and you have maybe bad quality pictures and videos, yeah, or something that, you know, it doesn't kind of give a good first impression of you. I totally agree. And also about the importance of keeping the website updated. And this is, for those of you who are listening who are artists, you should definitely listen to episode 7, because there was Ezra Brown who talked about touring the world, and he really talked about how he manages to keep his website really active, really updated, just with the smartphone, even though when he's traveling all over the world. And he was saying that, you know, he integrates his Twitter, his Facebook, all these things on the blog section of his website, so that this website always looks fresh. There is always new content, the latest updates, latest pictures, and all these kind of great things. So it's definitely a good point that you brought up. And also about the mailing list, it's something the MySpace example was perfect, because we talked about it with Bob Jozinski on episode 2, and he made the exact same example of when MySpace underwent this kind of restart process with new people acquiring the platform. And yeah, I also think that mailing list, it's definitely something even artists should go for what you said, that you never know what happens with social media. You can work hard to gain or build a big following, but then, you know, something happens, you lose them. But with an email list, even if you happen to have some problem with your website, you will still have access to all those emails. So you can just send an email to say, sorry, the website is currently unavailable, it will be back up shortly, or just to send them an email. Okay, this is the new website, completely new domain name, whatever. It's definitely a great thing. And you know, I want to thank you for sharing those tips. And is there something else you would like to touch on, or should we get down into your article?
Well, I was going to say, if anyone's on Bandzoogle, they'll never have to send out that email about the website being down.
So an additional reason why to check Bandzoogle, right, out. No, definitely. It's true.
We use Amazon's S3 server system, so it's the most reliable.
Guys.
So yeah, artists don't have to send out that type of email. But yeah, definitely sending out emails to announce your upcoming tour, to announce your latest album. I mean, inside and outside the music industry, mailing lists are the best way to sell, to generate money. So yeah, once you have an album, yeah, you definitely need to promote on social media, don't get me wrong, but you're going to get more results from a mailing list than you are on Facebook or Twitter. It's a controlled environment. People want to hear from you because they signed up and they get the email on their computer, and there's an easy link and a controlled environment. It's not noisy with all sorts of ads that are going on like on Facebook, and they just click the link, go to your website, buy the album, and they're done. And you know, it's just something that I don't think enough musicians take seriously, and focus a little bit too much on social media, which is also important, but it's a very noisy atmosphere to try to stand out. But that mailing list of people, those people gave you their email address because they want to hear from you. So I think more musicians should take advantage. But yes, we can move on.
All right. So let's hear it, because I actually, I was reading this article by Dave. It's actually from the beginning of June, so not that long ago. But it's, you know, I think it's a very cool article. It's very, touches on a lot of interesting points. And the title of the article, and you will find the links at thejetspotlight.com/Episode 27. All the links to this, to the things we talk about with Dave and we mentioned, so Bandzoogle, the article, and all other great things we're going to talk about. The title of the article is 18 Ways Musicians Can Make Money. We are not going to talk about all the 18 18 ways because, you know, we otherwise we would be here all day. But Dave is going to talk about some very interesting things about them. So let's hear, Dave, where would you like to start from?
Yeah, the reason I wrote that article is it's still one of the most common questions that I get asked is, you know, how do we make money? Which I think is the wrong question to ask up front. You know, it's one of those things. It's not easy for sure. And I think before bands think about generating money and trying to have a full-time career, they really need to focus on their craft first, so on their music and their live show. And once you get that up to a really great level, then you can start looking to monetize it. But everyone wants to know about money. So, like I mentioned in the article, sort of the days of being able to rely on music sales and touring are as a way to earn a full-time living are kind of over. You really need to diversify your revenue streams now. So I wrote the article. There's going to be an update to this article because there's, you know, since I published it, it got a lot of comments and new ideas mm-hmm. came in. So it's probably going to be 21 or 22 next time I But, you know, there's the classic ones. There's, of course, music sales are still, you know, a lot of people assume because you can get music for free or stream it for free that you shouldn't bother selling it. But I think there are some fans who are always going to want to buy your music, so let them. Let them buy.
Yeah, it's true.
Why not let them? So, you know, I'm a big fan of the pay what you want model. So, you know, you can do that on Bandzoogle. You can either set the price or you can just make it pay what you want. And often, you know, people will pay more than what you would have charged anyways because they want to support your career. So definitely have your music for sale. Have music for sale at live shows. Like, people may not use the CDs or the vinyls, but they want something tangible that you can sign, that's a memory
exactly.
of that show. So having CDs, having vinyls at your live shows, I think is still relevant. I know there's digital sales, there's streaming, which is becoming more predominant. Well, kind of less here in Canada where I am, but definitely around the world, streaming is seriously making a run at digital sales. Revenue from that right now is not as interesting, but it is a very different model. So when musicians see like, oh, I got paid 0.003 cents for a song, you have to think about that if a fan buys an artist's CD for $10, how many times are they going to listen to the music on that CD? And that's how streaming is monetized. It's how many listens. So if you have music that is, you know, that a fan is really addicted to and they listen to it all the time, then, you know, over time, it'll take a lot longer, but you could generate even more money from that album. But it's a controversial subject. I won't get into this podcast, but it is something that, you know, I've been using streaming services now for a couple of years, and Spotify just entered Canada recently. And, you know, if an artist isn't on there, I'm not listening to them. So you kind of need to be on there because it is also a great way for people to discover your music. So, you know, hopefully revenue from those services will become more interesting over time, but it's something that musicians should still consider using. Other traditional stuff like live shows, physical merch, you know, these things aren't going away. You know, a lot of bands still pound the pavement and play a lot of live shows, and that means you're going to sell more merch. The whole royalties side of the industry, so digital royalties, whenever music is played on webcasters or satellite radio, you can get live performance royalties. You can get your music licensed in film and television and get royalties from that. And YouTube. So YouTube, the next big wave, it's already started, but the next big wave of monetization is really on YouTube. And you're seeing a lot mm-hmm. of services pop up for musicians that help them to monetize their videos, so that if ads are placed on videos where their music is being used, then they get a percentage of that ad revenue. So, you know, companies like Audiam or CD Baby, TuneCore, these places can help musicians access some of that money. So that's going to be a really interesting part of the industry, I think, in the next 5 years. And just to touch on something else here before I stop blabbing. I ended the article with some things like cover gigs and music lessons and session work. And there are some musicians who kind of look down on that. Like, they don't want to do cover gigs or they don't want to give lessons because they think it sort of cheapens who they are as an artist if they're an original artist. And I get that to a certain extent. But, you know, if the choice is, if you're not generating enough revenue from your original music to make a living, and your choice is, you know, to work a day job that you're not going to enjoy, or to teach your instrument, or to play music, other people's music, and cover gigs and corporate gigs and things like that, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that's a very respectable way to earn income, and you're honing your own craft at the same time. So it does help you indirectly as well. Some musicians shy away from that kind of thing, but it's something I definitely encourage. If you're looking to earn a living, then you have to look at some of these other alternative ways to make money from music. And I think those are valid ways to generate income for sure.
Mm-hmm. No, I definitely agree with you. And some of the things that you mentioned, like especially when it comes to gigs, we talked about them with Nicola Milan on episode 24, because we talked about the different types of gigs, so what one can get out of them. There were four different types of gigs, and corporate gigs were also mentioned, so that's definitely an option. And I also like that you mentioned the YouTube and the kind of monetization aspect of YouTube, because I've also been reading about it, that it's becoming more and more of a big thing, and it's something that artists are really not taking advantage of at the moment, because either they don't know about it, or they just, you know, focus more on Facebook and Twitter, for example, and kind of ignore things like YouTube or even SoundCloud, that I think it's can be a very powerful platform, you know, to get your music discovered because of the like million of users that are using it. And, you know, what I wanted to ask you is like maybe a bit of a tough question, but do you think, you know, you can find the balance between providing music for free and, you know, selling music? Obviously, you mentioned earlier that you are for the kind of pay what you want system.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's always tough. It's a tough decision, but I think that, especially on an artist website, like iTunes has like whatever, 60-second previews, 30, 60-second previews, whatever it is. I think on your website, you need to have full songs on there. And like you said, YouTube, some artists shy away about putting their music on YouTube, but chances are it's going to go up there anyways.
And yeah, exactly.
It's better for it to be on your official channel, and that way you can control it a little bit more, and you can choose whether to monetize it or not by putting ads on the video. But I enjoy going to an artist's YouTube page and seeing that they have like one or two official videos from an album, but then the rest of the songs are lyric videos. Because mm-hmm. then I can sample everything right there on YouTube. And again, if you're monetizing those videos, some of that could turn into interesting revenue. But, you know, the music is probably going to wind up on YouTube anyway, so you should have it all on your official channel. So in terms of selling, you know, again, I think you should, but I don't think you should put a strict paywall on your music and only allow people to hear full songs or hear a full album if they pay the full price for it. I think in this day and age, that is a much tougher proposition than it used to be. And I know I definitely want to hear a few songs before investing any money. And again, I've slowly, the last couple of years, turned into a consumer who pays for access rather than pays for ownership of music. So the question itself might be irrelevant in 5 years.
No, it's true. And I think also that sometimes a sort of mistake artists make when it comes to these or platforms like Spotify that you mentioned or SoundCloud is that they kind of focus more on the financial aspect of it and not about the numbers. So when you read that, you know, Spotify has X million users all over the world, that's where you should kind of focus your attention. So, you know, to think like, okay, if I have my music on Spotify, it will be in front of X million people listening, theoretically speaking. Same thing for SoundCloud, because I see it especially with SoundCloud. It's something that for many artists is still like, you know, a hidden treasure that they don't even know what it is. And for me, I think it's really pity, because I think that that's also something that it's picking up. And then it's also so that the access, the kind of access barrier to these services, it's so low. It's so easy to start to use them that either they are free, or even if they have a premium version, the costs are really like just a few bucks per month. So if I think as an artist, that's definitely something one should focus on. And also, like you said about the fact that the songs, when it comes to YouTube, they probably will end up on YouTube anyways. So not why to have your own official channel, like you said, and have a couple of good videos, and then maybe some lyrics, songs with lyrics or something like that. No, I definitely agree with what you said. And is there something else? Oh, no, actually, this, I have a question for you. Is there a way of, you know, of kind of making money that you think musicians are not taking advantage of from what you've seen other than YouTube? Is there something else?
Obviously YouTube, anything, and this is really not an area of expertise for me, just anything to do with royalties and publishing, just making sure that you're signed up with Sound Exchange to make sure you're collecting digital royalties, making sure you're part of a performing rights organization to get your live performance royalties, or when your music is played, at bars and restaurants and clubs and things like that. You know, all of these little streams can add up to something a little bit more significant. So it's just to make sure that, it takes organization and a little bit of administrative work, but it's important to do that stuff. Mm-hmm. Make sure you're accessing all the music, all the revenue from your music that's out there. Because I mean, I know the Sound Exchange, I mean, their biggest issue is they have millions and millions of dollars sitting there unclaimed, because musicians aren't and bands aren't claiming it. It's there under their names, but they haven't signed up and they haven't gone to collect it. So, you know, that's definitely something musicians should take advantage of.
Yeah, no, definitely. You know, another great things about Dave is that, you know, not only he writes great articles, he's part of this great company that is Bandzoogle, but he also a director. He directed a documentary that is titled What is Indie? And, you know, it's really interesting if you want to go more in depth about the indie world. And he also features about 20 artists from North America, from cities like Montreal, Toronto, New York, Boston, and it also features contribution by music experts such as Derek Sivers, the founder of CD Baby, and Panos Panay of Sonic Beats, the founder of Sonic Beats. So Dave, tell us a little bit more about what is indie.
Sure, yeah. So that project was done in 2005, 2006. And it happened by accident. I have no background in film whatsoever. I was just trying to put together a compilation album of some of my favorite indie bands. Mm-hmm. And wanted to, this is back in the day where CD-ROM extras were a big deal. Like you have like multimedia on the CD and it was a cool thing. Mm-hmm. So I wanted to do a little 5-minute video montage of interviews with some of these bands. And so I went around with a cameraman and these interviews were so interesting. We were just talking about the experience of being an independent musician, and there was a lot of common ground there. So we just kept filming and cut a trailer and invited other people to be in it. And it kind of just grew into something way, way beyond what I could have ever imagined. And, you know, we released a full length documentary film that was picked up by the National Film Board of Canada and, mm-hmm. Screened all over the world. And, it was a lot of fun, and it is almost 10 years old. And so when I was making the film, MySpace didn't even really exist. Mm-hmm. I did use MySpace to promote the film, but you know, there's a lot missing there. If someone were to watch it today, there's no social media, obviously there's no YouTube. But just the experience of being an independent musician, is definitely still relevant. It's interesting to look back on it and see people like Derek Sivers from CD Baby and Panos from Sonic Biz, both of whom have sold their companies, since the movie was made. But, just the outlook on the future, and, some of it has definitely come true. And I think, to just criticize myself in terms of where I thought the industry was going was partially correct, but I didn't see basically the film talks about how there was a breaking down of barriers to access to production. So you could record music for cheap at home studios, and then all of a sudden you could distribute it for cheap through services like CD Baby and TuneCore. And then you could promote your music through through the internet. And this is before social media, so even more so on social media. But what I didn't quite appreciate or see coming was that, oh yeah, now millions and millions of bands all have those same tools. That creates another problem, which is probably the biggest issue for bands these days, is how do you stand out from the crowd? How are you heard on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube when there's just so much content out there and people have such short attention spans? So, it's interesting to look back and see that I specifically missed that boat a little bit. But, you know, it was a very optimistic film. It was just when things were just starting to change, and, iTunes, I think, was number 7 or number 8 music store in the world at that point. I mean, it's been number 1 for years now. So a lot has changed since then. So it was definitely an interesting project, an interesting snapshot of the industry at that time. If I were to make another film now, I mean, it would be a very different film, and the industry is very different than it was, obviously 8 or 9 years ago. But, if anyone wants to see that movie, they can go to davecool.ca and just contact me through the contact form, and, I'll let them know how they can see it.
Mm-hmm. No, but you know, I think it's very interesting because, you know, it doesn't happen often to meet someone from the music industry who, you know, in addition to, you know, working closely with artists or being an artist himself and doing the great things you're doing, writing great articles, as also, you know, directed a documentary, a movie that talks about the music industry and in this case, the indie scene. I think it's very interesting. So all of those of you who are listening, you know, even though Dave said that he might now be a bit kind of outdated in a way, I think it's a very interesting, you know, look at the indie scene. So just go to davecool.ca and contact Dave to learn more about how you can access the documentary. And this is where I want to go next. We are about to wrap up this episode, but before we do that, I would like you to tell us a bit more about your website, about davecool.ca, because I know that people there can find quite a lot of great value, great free ebooks, free reports. So what can you tell about that, davecool.ca?
Yeah, so if people go there, there's a section called free downloads, and there's a bunch of free ebooks there. The last few have been ones that I've done for Bandzoogle, mm-hmm. That are website related. There's one about attending music conferences, and there's also one that was written by a good friend of mine and mentor, Peter Spellin from the Berklee College of Music. So they can go to my website and download those. It's, you know, I was more active on my website before I started working for Bandzoogle. I released the Music Conferences 101 ebook through my website, and that's actually how I got the job with Bandzoogle, because the CEO heard through actually a friend of mine who worked at Sonic Bids that I had written this book and that I lived in his home city. And, and so he contacted me and said that Bandzoogle was looking for someone to give them some content and make their blog more active. So, it started off slowly, an article a week or an article every couple of weeks. And then, you know, that was 3.5 years ago, 4 years ago, and, full-time staff. So as I did more for Bandzoogle, I started focusing less on davecool.ca, but I've left everything up there. Those downloads are very relevant and they're free. So if people want to go check that out, there's also some episodes of my podcast up there on the website, my now defunct podcast. But so yeah, it's actually powered by Van Zoogle, of course. So it's, you know, I keep it up there because of those resources, because I still get questions about what is Indie the film. So I just wanted somewhere online where people could find information out about that. I still get an email every week or so from a student at a university who's doing a project on independent music and heard about my movie and wants to use it as part of their research. So that's probably one of the biggest reasons why the website is up there to this day.
But please don't take it down because because the resources that are there, I think they rock.
Well, I appreciate that. I've got a good deal from Van Zoogle, so I think it'll be fine. I think it'll be online for a while, but yeah, it's also somewhere where I'm archiving my blog posts from Van Zoogle. I haven't done one in a while. I blog every week for Van Zoogle, but I haven't archived them back on davecool.ca in a while, but I do use it for that as well, just because I average just over 100 blog posts a year for Van Zoogle. Which is a lot of writing, and I'm proud of most of it, not all of it. Some of it's better than others, but most of it I'm really proud of, and so I archive some of the older posts on davecool.ca as well. So that's it. Like I said, if people want to know about the film, they can just reach out directly through the website, and I usually can respond within a couple of days.
Yeah, so as I said earlier, please don't take the website down. And, you know, most importantly, keep up the great writing, because, I mean, I really love your articles and I really love the great things you are doing, like you and your colleagues at Van Zoogle. Dave, if people would like to learn more about you, obviously, we've mentioned now your website, davecool.ca. You mentioned earlier Twitter. Is there some other website or platform where people can find you and learn more about you or read more about you and your writings?
Yeah, the best place, I guess, is Twitter at Dave_cool. And Van Zoogle's blog. There's a link right on the homepage of vanzoogle.com for the blog. And you'll see my face up there most of the time. Posting blog posts. So if people want to read my stuff, that's the best place to go find it.
Sounds cool. Dave, thank you so much for being on the podcast and, you know, for telling us more about Van Zoogle, giving out advices on, you know, how websites should look, what they should have, and also for talking about the ways musicians can actually make money.
It was fun, man. I appreciate you having me on.
My pleasure. Thanks, man. All right, we are back. Dave, if you're listening to the episode, thank you so much for being here, for providing this much value, for giving out advice and talking about different ways musicians can earn money. And for those of you who are listening, you know, if you're thinking about building a website, there are different services out there. Van Zoogle is one of them. It's really popular. You can definitely check it out. I think they also have a free trial, so I would definitely go for it to see what they have to offer. And there is something I actually forgot to tell you about in the introduction. You remember I talked about the Soul Art Pop-Up Festival again, September 5th and 6th, with the Soul Talks on September 6th, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. And you can, you know, as I said, sorry if I sound like a broken record, but, you know, I want to make sure that you're going to be with me on September 6th on 1 p.m., that you can find more information about this and the broadcast of the event at jetspotlight.com/soul. And what I forgot to tell you is that actually there's going to be also some material, some resources that are going to be there for you to download after the event. So, you know, even if you cannot make it, you will be still able to follow the event and create some valuable resources, both from myself and also from some of the speakers. So, you know, definitely mark this down again. I really urge you to do that. And, you know, I'm sure it's going to be a great event, plenty of great information. And also it's interesting because we're going to talk about different topics. So, you know, there's going to be plenty of interesting stuff for everyone. Like always, just remember that you can find the show notes of this episode, all the great things Dave and I talked about at thejetspotlight.com/episode27. And you know, if you're looking through the show notes right now, why not to share the episode? Just click on the share button and, you know, share it with your friends and with your colleagues and, you know, all the artists that perhaps are following you on Twitter, because I'm sure that they can benefit from it. And, you know, thank you if you do so. And I'm really excited about next week, because there's going to be another great guest. And, you know, I look forward to be with you in a few days. I'm Yan Ilunga, and this is the Jazz Spotlight Podcast. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.